yo, ho, yo, ho, a pirate's life for me. We pillage, we plunder, we rifle and loot. Drink up, me hearty, yo, ho. We kidnap and ravage and don't give a hoot. Drink up, me hearty, yo, ho. Yo, ho, yo, ho, a pirate's life for me.
Welcome.
Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, the Pirate Monk Podcast is on the air.
Yes.
I'm your host, Nate Larkin, here with the Reverend, the Right Reverend.
Yes.
Mondo, engineer extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm. The plaid Right Reverend.
Yeah. Again. Yeah. I see. But these are kind of a more understated plaid short.
Yeah, the earth tones today. Mm-hmm. So I think it's becoming a thing, guys, where Mondays I'm breaking out plaid shorts. Some sort of clothing ensemble for discussion. Because I'm actually, it's funny because I'm getting emails
really?
Through the Samson site
from
guys that are asking about different types of shorts I may have.
Yeah, yeah.
What color do I have on today?
Don't tell me that guys are actually going to take fashion advice from
me. I hope not. That'd be bad, probably.
You're sporting the two-tone shoes today, too, my
friend. Yeah, man. You know, I've had these for a long time, and I figure I'd break them out.
Yeah?
You know? Yeah, so just a little earth tone ensemble for y'all today.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, we have to get a video podcast.
We're gonna have to make the jump to the video.
Yeah, book. So you guys can appreciate what Nate is appreciating right now. Yes, indeed.
Well,
we're back. We've been off for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. We missed last week. Mm-hmm. I was gone.
And where were you,
my friend? I was in Alaska.
Yeah. Okay. That's not a place that most people have the blessing or opportunity to go to.
Yeah.
So what were you doing in Alaska?
I was visiting my grandchildren.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah, my daughter and her husband took my grandchildren hostage and drove them from Tennessee to Alaska.
Yes.
Back at the end of May.
Okay.
They decided they didn't want to be here for the summertime.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because it's been 800 degrees here. Yeah.
So they went to one of the most beautiful spots on the planet.
That's wonderful.
A gorgeous little town just south of Anchorage.
Okay.
On the Cook Inlet. Surrounded by snow-capped mountains
and the
northernmost coniferous rainforest in the United States, or in the world, I guess.
Wow.
Just absolutely gorgeous there in Girdwood, Alaska. And so we went up, Allie and I went up and spent 8 days. We were going to go for 5 days,
mm-hmm.
and then I looked at the weather forecast for Franklin, Tennessee.
Yes, and what did you see?
I saw it was like 101 degrees.
Yeah, you said, nobody. I'm staying in Alaska.
So I changed the flights, and we stayed a few more days
up
there.
I hear you. We did get a few days of rain, though, so it cooled it off just temporarily.
Really?
But you know how it is when it rains and the sun comes back out? It's like you're in a frying pan.
Yeah.
It cooled off for about 48 hours, and after that, it just came right back to blazing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's awesome, man. So you got back a couple days ago, right?
Yeah, got back Saturday afternoon. That grueling red eye overnight flight.
I hate that
thing.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm still trying to find my bearings. What did you've been a busy guy?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Man, I have some family again. Hotel Mondo again. but you know, it was actually this time was great, man. My family came down. My parents, an aunt, and uncle. We decided to record a record for my uncle. He's an older gentleman. He sings gospel music, he's a school teacher.
Yeah,
and he's always had a dream just to record an album. And
yeah.
So he asked me this past July 4th at our family reunion, in joking, you know, hey, you know, would you do a record for me? You know.
Yeah.
And I said sure.
Yeah.
Why not? So I said, well, if you come down, we're doing it. So if you're serious, you can come down to Nashville, we'll do it. So he came down, man. He wasn't joking.
Did he have any idea?
Man, he had no clue.
Yeah.
He had no clue what was ahead in store for him. He came down and we had some great musicians.
Yeah.
Great studios, great people. We did a lot of great eating.
Yeah.
You know, we were real busy. You know, just in a weekend to cut a record in a weekend is...
That's nuts.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
It was actually 3 days.
And, yeah.
So we were running around studio to studio, and he's singing, his face off, man. He's doing, he's a big kid, you know.
Yeah.
He's just having a great time, and he was in Franklin. He loved Franklin, Tennessee. He loved the food. He loved the people. So we just had a great time, man. And
you were pulling studio musicians in. Had he ever had that experience
before? Oh, he had never had that, man. You know, I've got guys who have played played with Israel Houghton and people that have played with Johnny Lang and you know, these talented, you know, wonderful
musicians.
Sure,
the guys who just walk in and lay it down.
Oh, they're here in just 2 seconds and, you know, and they're cranking. And so he didn't know. He was just sitting here with his mouth to the floor. And he would walk out. It was funny. When he would see how talented someone was, he would be really shy about it. Then he would leave the room, and he'd get on the phone and start calling all his buddies in Detroit. And I'm like, where's Unc at, man? Where'd he go? And I go, say, man, what are you doing out here? He said, oh, I'm on the phone. I'm telling my friend Dwayne about what this guy's doing, you know. So it was such a great thing, man, because I saw what it did for my family. And it was such a ministry in a way. For me to do this with my family, and not to say for, I'll say with, because my parents were a big part of bringing them down here, and my uncle, you know, they made the effort to come down here, and we haven't really been close throughout my life, but now we are, and something like this is really played a big part of bringing families together, and so it was great, man. It's been busy, but it's been great.
You got any of those cuts lying around? Could we play one with your unk? You
think? Oh yeah, I got. Okay, here I will do this. I'll play a rough.
Uh huh.
Okay. Now it's not done.
I understand.
It's not mixed.
I understand.
So please understand, the listeners, guys, gals.
Okay.
This is the behind the scenes look, the preview of what happened this past weekend. I will play one. It's actually a cover tune from a gospel group called the Jackson Southerners.
Okay.
And the song's called Thunder.
All right.
And I will play the rough. Again, let me repeat that. Rough. But it sounds good, though. It sounds good. Yeah, so we have to mix it and everything like that.
I got to tell you, after, you know, living here in Nashville for 10, 12 years, guys, you know, they give me roughs and demos and scratch tracks from time to time. And they're apologizing like crazy because it isn't polished, it isn't finished. And
but it sounds great, though.
Yeah, to me. Yeah, what do I know? I
mean,
holy smokes.
Well, I know we have some industry professionals probably listening as well. So this is the track and rough. This is what we tracked. We haven't edited even. We haven't cut. So, but my uncle's very pleased, so I'm sure he wouldn't mind you guys checking it out. So,
all right, let's do that.
Where the rain don't fall, when I leave this world to return. turn no more. I wanna see Jesus, who once died for me. I wanna see the one who suffered and set me free.
He set me free.
Oh, I wanna shake and see his nail-scarred hands.
Ooh, yeah.
And hear him say, welcome to the promised land. I just wanna go where the thunder don't roll. Oh, there, where trouble winds don't blow. Oh, I wanna go where the rain don't pour. When I leave this world to return no more, I wanna go where there's peace and harmony, where little children won't be afraid to walk the street, where there's joy. Ooh, and peace of mind. I wanna go where the angels veil their faces, singing holy, 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 holy.
Oh, yes, I'm going.
All around God's throne.
Yes, I'm going.
Live together.
Oh, yes, I'm going.
In the light,
oh, yes, I'm going home.
Shall we pay?
Oh, yes, I'm going.
Just like
yes,
it has.
I'm going home.
And ooh,
oh, yes, I'm going.
A child will lead
yes,
them.
Yes, I'm going home.
Said I'm going. Oh, yes, I am. I'm going. Oh, yes, I am. What the wicked. I'm going. Oh, yes, I am.
And we're back. What do you say, Mondo? You want to go to the mailbag?
Let's go to the mailbag.
All right.
Now, before we get into the mailbag,
yeah,
let's talk about the mailbox.
That's right. We do have we have a snail mail mailbox now.
Yes, box 224. P.O. Box 224.
Franklin, Tennessee.
37065.
That's right.
So guys, please do know you can send letters in or through email or
that's right.
or through mail or
that's right.
through.
You can also send cigars.
Yes. Yeah. Any little gift you may want to send.
Anything you want us to review.
View,
we can't
a
promise.
Book.
We can't promise
yeah,
review, but
yeah, exactly. So.
But we'll look at it if you send it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So,
all right.
Because it has been empty, by the way.
Cookies. You can send cookies.
Cookies. All right. So, but
plaid shorts.
But plaid shorts. Oh, yeah. Plaid shorts. Yeah. So.
All right.
All right. So, in the email.
They
inbox.
Also can they also can reach us on the worldwide interweb.
Yes, they can.
At letters mm-hmm. at SamsonSociety.org.
Okay.
Or you can mail Mondo, as many of you have,
yes.
on the Samson site. You can mail me on the Samson site.
Mm-hmm.
You can Facebook me.
Yeah.
Or can Facebook Mondo.
There you go.
This is true.
There you go. So what do we have today?
Well, here's a letter that came on the Samson site. I'm going to edit it just so that we maintain the
Understood.
Anonymity of the guy who wrote.
Absolutely.
But he writes, I'm an associate pastor in a southern town, small town of about 7,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
I had just started going to a Samson meeting in my previous town when I took the call here. However, this part of the South is not known for its openness or its willingness to deal with messy things.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I've started to meet with a counselor friend and a pastor friend in another town. But it's not like Samson.
Hmm.
I do believe at some point there needs to be a way to set up a safe place for guys like me. Even here in the South, where we generally pull back from dealing with difficult subjects, I don't think my church would be ready for me to admit that I've struggled with the internet and with some television viewing. Now, I don't look at hard or soft porn the way it's normally defined, but I have looked at scantily clad women on the net and late night television commercials with accompanying masturbation. My frequency with this is about once a week, At any rate, it is using women who are not my wife for sexual gratification, and it is sin. My wife knows about it and is helping me with it. I do have covenant eyes on my computer with my wife, and my two friends I told you about are my accountability partners. I go into all this detail because I struggle with feelings of hypocrisy in the pastorate, like you did. I'm also fearful of how it would be handled if I ever went to my elders or fellow presbyters about it. So the best I have done is to talk to my wife more and more and to my friends about once a month. Maybe I should get them the book. Get them to read the book and try to set it up with them. But as you can see, people are not crawling out of the woodwork in response to your book in my part of the South. There's not one group from this state that I could find on the meetings list. I know I can and should do something about this, but I really don't know where to begin because the need is so great and the risks are great as well. Mm-hmm. I'd like any wisdom you might have on this situation. How should I go about beginning the path so that not only me, but probably many others who are struggling in the pastorate can make progress? Thanks for being there. I guess you probably get thousands of messages like this, so just knowing you're there and I can write you about this is a great help. Well, brother, I don't get thousands of letters like this, but I do get a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And I have great sympathy for your dilemma as a pastor. Mm-hmm. I want to encourage you, first of all, to try and step away from feelings of shame about the struggle you're in. You're in a very human struggle. It's something that is common to man. Sexual obsession and illicit sexual behavior, inappropriate internet use, it runs rampant among the ministry, guys in the ministry. Almost always the most isolated guy in a church is the pastor, and that isolation sets him up for temptation, especially around the internet. I really applaud your openness, your willingness to find a counselor, to talk with another pastor about it. I'm glad that you're being discreet. Glad that you're able to be open with your wife, and I hope that she's got somebody that she can talk with about this so that she doesn't feel as though she's got to carry it alone, that somehow she's married to damaged goods. I really do believe that a pastor cannot minister effectively until he's come to terms with his own sin, until he's facing it on a daily basis, until he's talking about it in the present tense and not in the past tense. Mm-hmm. It's only when I see myself as a sinner rather than an ex-sinner that I can truly apprehend and communicate grace. If I only talk about my failures in the past tense, mm-hmm. Then I intimidate those around me who are very much in touch with the reality of their own current struggle. At the same time, I agree that it would probably be suicidal for you to disclose the nature of the struggle, certainly from the pulpit.
Oh, yeah.
And until you've built relationships with your coworkers in the church, possibly even with them as well. We face a very resourceful and determined foe, and we can only defeat him together. Mm-hmm. We have to war together. And frankly, I don't think that calling your brothers once a month is going to cut it.
Right.
You got to get into more daily intentional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd encourage you to use the Samson site where you can.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you, brother, if you will message me, and I'll respond to this email in writing as well, you send me an address, I'll send you some books to get started with. You can pass those out to other pastors, and you don't have to disclose right up front the nature of your struggle. Do know that at least half of the guys you give the book to are in the same fight.
Mm.
But pastors have this convenient fiction that we can we can kind of use to our advantage at times. And we can talk with great concern about our parishioners and wanting to give resources to those men in our church who might struggle with addictive behavior, sexual or otherwise. And we can recommend resources to each other that certainly can help those who are under our care. But you know, I remember reading an awful lot of books as a pastor, ostensibly for the benefit of my congregation, but I was just desperately looking for answers myself. Mm. And I'll send you some books. You can pass them around. And the experience of successful closed Samson meetings, I do. I am a big advocate of closed Samson meetings for pastors. There are pastors who are able to function in Samson meetings where they're just another one of the guys and they're bringing it. But that really is in a church and in a community that has a deep culture of grace. Mm-hmm. And even then, pastors have to be somewhat circumspect in what they share in the public part of the meeting. The more successful the successful pastors meeting that pastors meetings that I'm aware of are trans-denominational. Mm. So I would encourage you to get intentional about making relationships outside your own denomination. Guys that you seem to have an affinity with that you can talk with, you might want to toss them the book, and I'll pray with you that God gives you some other men in the ministry that you can walk with without having to talk in code, somebody who you can check in with on a daily basis and really start to take some ground here. Thank you so much for writing. Please know that you are not alone. Other pastors, church leaders, church staff members out there, if you're in a similar fight and you'd like to add your voice to this conversation, please do, and I'll convey it to this brother. All right. All right. Well, that's it, I guess, for mail today.
Yeah.
Love to hear some more, mm-hmm. receive some more letters from anybody, suggestions for the podcast, questions, comments.
Ideas.
Yeah.
Two places you can send those again to... the P.O. Box, Franklin, P.O. Box 224, Franklin, Tennessee, 37065.
Or letters at SamsonSociety.org. And we'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
Okay, and we're back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Hey, Mondo.
Yes.
Did you make the workshop this last weekend?
No, I did not. I did not. Did you?
Now, that's an unfair question.
You asked me.
No, I did not make it to the workshop, and I felt terrible about it. That was the one thing I remember after... I remembered it about 5 minutes after changing our return plans from Alaska.
Conveniently 5 minutes after.
Yeah. Oh, crap. It's the workshop on Friday night. Rob Brown.
Yeah.
Rob Brown had been... by the way, I've got Rob Brown on the phone. I think I got Rob on the phone.
Rob, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am here.
All right.
I am here.
Rob had been asked by some of the brothers here in Nashville to come and just do a little bit of follow-up workshop. Guys who'd gone to 48 hours that Rob had led, and they wanted some help, some guidance, some work, just some collaborative work on how a guy could best spend his best year, how a group could best spend their first year together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Rob, you guys, and sure, I said I'd help. Or at least I said I'd attend, and I'd contribute. And the name of the workshop was Building a Foundation for Brotherhood, Samson Society Year One, mm-hmm. or something along those lines. It was just going to be a small group here, and then it kind of got a little bit out of hand, didn't it, Rob?
Yeah, it did. It got out of hand in an awesome way.
Yeah.
An awesome
I'm glad to hear that the evening wasn't crippled by my absence. it did hurt my feelings a little bit that nobody cared that I didn't show up.
I found that fascinating that it was either that no one cared or everyone expected you to have a conflict with not being able to make it. I don't know. Step in Alaska, though, was one heck of an excuse. So in the mountains and valleys. And
there were bears on the porch. I couldn't get past the bears, Rob.
Oh, no. I appreciate you sending me a couple of pictures of encouragement as you walk through the valleys and river and mountains. Yeah. No, seriously, we had such an incredible night together on Friday. There were guys that drove, five hours away to join us there in Franklin at Christ Community for a few hours. We put together a workshop that was just awesome for a Friday night for 40 guys to show up from all over. Just kind of tells you how hungry and that men are for more.
Yeah.
For even more as we all walk down this path together.
Yeah.
Couple things.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, a couple of things that we did, I think, that were the crux. I also had quite a few guys emailing and posting from all over regarding, materials and webcasts and how can we somehow participate and so on. And we'll just kind of have to figure that out. But one of the critical things, I think, that we put together in preparation for the workshop is called a Pirate Monk Assessment. And really what it is, it's a private, between you and God, assessment of the seven stages of the path that kind of allow each of the Sanson men to do an honest assessment as to where you're at in your relationship with God, in your relationship with walking with a Silas, or in your group.
Mm-hmm.
So about
I love the assessment, by the way, and I really appreciated that you kept me up to speed in its development. It's just a brilliant tool that I think is just going to bring an awful lot of benefit to Samson groups around the country and around the world.
I agree. We had about a 20-minute period of individual time that all the guys were able to do the assessment on their own, and then we broke out into about six groups, six or seven, and each guy, in our typical Samson meeting format, was able to share, where, something that stood out on where they're at on the path, and that's really the intention of this assessment. Really, is for two brothers, either a beginning Silas relationship or one that's been together for a year or wherever you're at on the path, for two men to kind of walk through. And also, as a group, one of the guys said that they are going to go back and start, they're going to use the assessment for the group, and then for the next 7 weeks, go through the seven stages of the path 1 week at a time.
Mm.
And I just think that is a phenomenal idea. I think as a group here in Knoxville, we were afraid to do anything different than the format and just pick a topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, going through each stage of the path, I think would be a very rewarding thing for
all
of
them. Yeah, that's a nice way for a group to change it up. Just do a little assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Take a period of time, and rather than do, standard pick a topic during sharing time,
mm-hmm.
To kind of gather around the fire together, and let's use this tool and talk about where we are individually and where we are as a group.
Nate and Mondo, I guess there was a couple things, and Nate, I wasn't able to tell you that I think were kind of profound or powerful towards the end. I kind of did a little statistical assessment, if you will, and asked the men, how many of you know what the Course and Consequences coursework is and what that really means in stage three? And I had 12 guys out of 40 raise their hands that knew what that was.
Wow. We got some work to do, brother.
Yeah. And I said, so I also had some worksheets with me because I figured that might be the case to give out to the guys. And then I said, well, how many of you actually know that there's a revised kind of Silas charged meeting format on the Samson homepage that that includes these worksheets? And four guys out of 40 knew that those existed on the Samson homepage.
Ooh.
So again, I guess what that told me is that, you know, there's a real need for resources for groups and guys to be able to kind of get on the path and stay on it and answer a lot of basic questions. And quite frankly, this assessment is just a three-page assessment. It's fairly straightforward and simple. And I think some simple things like this will really help a lot of men.
Well, Rob, I can't thank you enough for your dogged persistence, your faithfulness, not just to your brothers in Knoxville, but to Samson brothers and Samson groups around the country. You are, you really have thrown yourself heart and soul into this work, and you want to see guys and groups succeed.
Mm-hmm.
It's ironic to me that at this point, I think, Rob Brown, you've got more experience in 48 Hours of Frankness, that equipping weekend that Samson does. You've got more experience in that than I do.
Yeah.
The remarkable initiative that you've shown. I know you were up in Minnesota not long ago, leading a weekend up there. You've made yourself available to do those for other groups around the country. And then to take the time to create this assessment tool to come and lead the workshop, brother, I know that that kind of faithfulness does not go unrewarded.
Well, brother, I got to tell you, just a couple things I want to say. One, on the subject of 48 hours, I think we all made a decision and a core group of folks that have been really faithful to the 48 hours mission, that rather than wait for kind of groups to pop up, we decided to go ahead and march out into the front lines and schedule 48 hours events at different places in the country based on where, you know, large gatherings or concentrations of Samson brothers are, and just do them.
Nice.
Just do them and have them pre-scheduled and planned out and execute these things so men can sign up and come, maybe in places like, you know, Orlando, Denver, you know, and so on, which is easy for guys to get to or easier.
Fantastic.
The other thing is, I'll tell you, my wife and I, Francie, have been asked and confirmed yesterday on delivering a custom 48 hours of frankness for some college young adults, college-age young adults, about 40 of them, coming up in September.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
And it's a mixed group of male and female. Francie's been involved in women's ministry for 5 years, and obviously I've been doing my thing. So we're kind of approaching this with a whole lot of excitement and fear all at the same time, and yet we just feel like God's doing a mighty work. And
that's
great. Lastly, what drives my fuel is, I'll just say this in the simple sense of give you a context of my testimony on Friday night, was 2009, I was carried by my Samson brothers through the hardest year of my life, and I don't mind telling you, in 2009, I'd lost my whole business. and closed with the economic stuff that went on. We had to go into, negotiations with the IRS, bankruptcy proceedings, you name it, leaving our church, two of our best friends going through divorce, foreclosure and losing our home. It was the hardest and darkest year of my life as a man. And I had three Silas brothers that held out their hands through Jesus to pull me out of a dark corner where I often curl up like an orphan child and in fear and anxiety and feeling like I'm left alone. And these brothers said, no. No, you're not going to live in that corner anymore. I'd be out hiding somewhere, taking a job somewhere else out in the country, living back in isolation and feeling like a failure and shame. And here I am.
Yeah.
And so, a big part of what, and Nate, I told you before, when we literally had to move from our home, towards the end there of last year, we had four or five folks from church show up to help, and 15 Samson guys show up the day after Thanksgiving, on Friday morning, the day after Thanksgiving. 15 men in trucks and gloves, and when I was so weak that I couldn't lift, there they were. All right, brothers. Well, listen. It's you guys keep up the good work.
All right,
we'll do.
Thanks again, Rob, for your service to the Brotherhood, to the entire Samson Society. You're a blessing to the fraternity of pirate monks, man. And we'll keep the podcast audience updated on the progress of upcoming 48 Hours of Frankness weekends as we get those scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, give my love to Francie. You're married to a fantastic woman.
Absolutely. I sure will, Nate. You do the same with Allie. And I hope you guys enjoyed your trip to Alaska.
We sure did.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. We'll talk to you.
All right.
Take care.
Take care, guys. All right, bye.
Bye.
He's not mad at you. And he's not disappointed. His grace is greater still than all of your wrong choices. He is full of mercy, and he is ever kind. His invitation is on. Open wide. You can come as you are, with all your broken pieces, all your shameful scars, the pain you hold in your heart. Bring it all to Jesus. You can come. as you are, with all your broken pieces and all your shameful scars. The pain you hold in your heart, you bring it all to Jesus. You can come as you are.
And we're back. Man, Mondo, it is exciting to have Marnie Faree with us this week.
Yes, it is.
Marnie is the founder of, or co-founder with Mark Laser, of the Bethesda Workshops. A real pioneer.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
Pioneer in the field of female sexual addiction. Author of the book No Stones. Women Redeemed from Sexual Addiction.
Yes.
Welcome, Marnie. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I got to tell you, I actually met you. No, I didn't. I didn't have the nerve to come up and speak to you.
But
I heard you.
Please.
I heard you speak 10 years ago. Had to have been at least 10 years. It was very early recovery for me. I heard you speak at a 12-step meeting in Nashville.
Oh.
You would not have seen me. I was seated on the floor in the back of the room against the wall. But I remember it as though it were yesterday. It was a full room, guys and girls.
Probably mostly men.
Mostly men. Very few women.
Yes.
And you told stories from your early days when you were pretty much the only woman who showed up at the meetings. And you told your story with such grace and candor and with such a complete absence of shame that I was literally bowled over. And I remember thinking, there is never, ever, ever going to come a day when I'll be able to tell my story the way. With that, you know, there was this joyfulness that you carried. There was this tremendous light of hope that you brought into the room. But it gave me a glimpse of what could lay ahead for me.
Oh,
I want
bless
to thank
your
you
heart.
For that. 10 years late to say thank you, but I want to say thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. That's so sweet. That just warms my heart today. Thank you. And, you know, it's interesting when you say that, Nate, I think about God knows the plans he has for you.
Yeah. He does, and it's exciting just to watch it unfold. Well, I imagine you tell your story. Do you still tell your story these days?
I do.
How about you give us just a thumbnail for the listeners here?
Thanks. My story is one of grace and hope and redemption. I'm a preacher's daughter, so I grew up in a Christian home. My dad, I think, dearly loved the Lord and struggled with sexual addiction. So there were many things from the inside of our home that didn't match the outside. My mother died when I was three, so that was such, of course, a life-shaping event. My father never remarried. I was sexually abused for 15 years, from the time I was 5 till I was 20, by one of my dad's dear friends. So that really confused me about sex and love, and I thought sex equaled love. I became really promiscuous in high school. I wanted to fill that black hole inside, and I had learned from this abuser that sex and relationship was the way to do that. Looking back, I think I was probably a sex addict by the time I was 16 or so years old. Had tons of shame about that, never told anyone. I thought if I got married, they'd take care of this promiscuity problem. And married my first husband in college, and neither one of us had any skills for a relationship. We both had tons of baggage and no understanding of our own stories. We divorced after 4 years of marriage with no children, and I'm grateful for that. Within 9 months, I had met and married David. David's my current husband. We've been married 29 years this fall. We have two wonderful children and a precious first grandchild, so that's so exciting in my life. But I really thought I was cured. I just thought, this is a geographical change. It's a relationship change. I'll be fine. And it was a very calm period in my life until I entered recovery. And then a lot of stresses came into our lives, and it really illuminated just the intimacy disorder between the two of us. We really still didn't have skills for relationship, though we did life much better between the two of us. By that point, we had two small children, and unfortunately, sadly, turned again to earlier ways of coping, which was sexual addiction, though I had no clue of that term at the time. Began an affair and another affair and another affair, and lived the next probably 4 years or so just immersed in a sexual addiction. My attention was really captured when I was diagnosed in 1990 with cervical cancer caused by HPV. So that definitely rocked my world. And today I'm grateful for that because it finally propelled me on a road of recovery. Entered recovery in 1991, actually in August of 1992 is what I consider a sobriety date, a real turning point of surrender, of recognizing this is not how I'd going to live my life any longer. And so I've been so grateful for that. David and I have done lots of work. We have two marvelous children. Along the way, I went back to school to get a counseling degree and licensure and began working with different colleagues in the field and working in doing workshops and helping people, ironically enough, wives in the beginning of male sex addicts through a program that Mark Laser and Eli Machen were leading. And coming back from Tupelo, Mississippi on the Natchez Trace late one Sunday night, returning from an effort down there, it wasn't an audible voice, Nate, but it sure felt that way of God saying, no one is doing this for women who struggle with sex addiction. And that was true. When I entered recovery in 1992 and walked into my first 12-step meeting for sex addiction, it was me and 20 men. And I knew there's got to be a female voice speaking. And so I began the first workshop in 1997, as far as we know, anywhere in the country, for dedicated, gender-specific for women struggling with sex and relationship addiction. And God's just built a ministry from there. It's such a blessing. I term it always, God has redeemed my pain. Wow. And I'm so grateful.
Wow. That's incredible.
And you continue to work with and have an impact upon male sex addicts as well, right?
Yes. The Bethesda Workshops program is now a very comprehensive program. We have a workshop for men who struggle with sex addiction, and there's a team of men clinicians, male clinicians who come from across the country to facilitate that. We continue to do a separate workshop for women who struggle with sex addiction. There's a team of women who come and help me with that. We have another workshop for partners of addicts, primarily wives of male sex addicts. And then people can come back as a couple. We really believe in a model that each person needs to be doing his and her own work before they can really address the issues in the coupleship.
Yes.
So we have those four offerings. And, you know, it's so neat, Nate, just to see what God has done. I tell often people at the end of a workshop, I wish that there had been something available in the 1950s and 60s for my dad. He's now in the late stages of Alzheimer's. And I wish there had been something available for my mom, because no one knew about sex addiction then. And we're talk about isolation. Where could she turn? I wish there had been more available for me as a female, and then for couples. So it's just wonderful to get to work in this every day.
Well, I do want to talk more about the Bethesda workshops and give our listeners some details on how they can get connected. But before we go there, can we talk some more specifically about sex addiction? Now, I think I know the answers to these questions because I'm a sex addict and been around in this world a while, but not all our listeners are familiar with the terminology. How would you compare I know that in let me ask it this way, in the minds of a lot of people these days, I hear some snickers when somebody suggests that Tiger Woods, for example, is a sex addict. You know, it's this this handy get out of jail free card, an excuse thing. It's can you give me reasons why you would classify anybody's sexual behavior as addictive, and in your mind, does that have any moral implications?
Of course it has moral implications. I mean, the behaviors that we're talking about around sex and relationship addiction are sin.
Yeah.
There's no sugarcoating that.
Yeah.
What's true at the same time, though, is that while it is sin, it is more than sin. And please hear listeners the quotes around the word more, meaning this is a multifaceted problem, mm-hmm. and it needs a multifaceted solution. Mm. It is a sin, spiritual problem, absolutely. It's also a emotional problem. Mm. Sex and relationship addiction is in large part about medicating feelings, mm-hmm. numbing feelings. I don't know how to handle feelings. It's a mental problem. There's lots of cognitive stuff about it. The false messages we believe about ourselves, about relationships, about sexuality. It's especially a huge neurochemical problem. Mm. And we ignore that part in the church, I think, to our peril.
Yeah.
That the brain of a sex addict, if observed on a functional MRI scan or PET scan, something like that, that kind of brain technology looks like the brain of an individual on cocaine.
Mm.
This is really powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's so many things that are going on in terms of what is sex or relationship addiction.
Yeah, yeah. Would you draw any distinction between female sexual addiction of any kind, and certainly sexual addiction, falls along a continuum.
Correct.
And it's difficult to make mm-hmm. blanket statements.
Right.
But generally speaking, typically, would you say that there are? Do you see differences between a typical male sex addict and a female sexual relationship addict? And I love that you add that.
Relationship.
Yeah. Because for lots of folks, really, the sex is secondary. It's that
yes.
the relationship.
It's the high of relationship.
It's the primary.
Yeah.
Right.
Because sex addiction is not about sex at all.
This is true.
This is not about the high of some sexual encounter.
Right.
This is about much deeper issues and needs.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see any differences or distinctions between the typical male sex addict, sex and relationship addict, and the typical female sex and addiction addict, sex and relationship addict?
I would have said 5 years ago, yes, there are a good many differences.
Mm-hmm.
That very generally speaking, that men are more physically driven mm-hmm. in their sexual acting out, and women are more relationally driven.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, that's still true. The stereotypical female sex addict is what we would call more a relationship addict, is mm-hmm. the woman who's having affairs, she's promiscuous, mm-hmm. she's a romance addict, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And that is still true. What's also true, though, and in ever-increasing numbers, is I see more and more women who are addicted to plain old visual mm-hmm. internet pornography.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, just according to things like Nielsen-net ratings for the web, 1 in 3 visitors to an adult website is a female.
Yeah, yeah.
So at least a third of those who are visiting adult websites, in terms of just the plain old visual pornography, is a woman.
Wow.
And what the researchers are saying is that this visually saturated culture, very visually oriented, is literally rewiring women's brains to be more like men's in terms of that visual acuity, just the visual stimulation.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I see that more and more and more, so that the lines between what is a male sex addict and a female are becoming much more blurred.
Fascinating.
It's sad.
Yeah. We get, as you know, Samson Society is a group for guys, for Christian
right.
guys. But we have a lot of female listeners to the podcast. Many of them listening for themselves. A lot of them listening because they've been impacted to their own shock and surprise
right.
by the addiction of a husband or a boyfriend. A lot of those women, you know, they receive the news with dread, this feeling that, oh no, they're married to the biggest pervert in the universe.
Right.
Now they're never going to be able to have a first class relationship, a good
right.
relationship. They tend to feel a lot of shame. And the letters that we get, that I get, women are saying, you know, they're just asking for advice. How do I deal? What do I do? Is there reason for hope? Should I stick around? I imagine you get those kind of questions all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I do.
Can you speak to that group of our listeners? Again, every story is unique, but imagine you just had them all in one room. What are the things you'd tell them?
I would tell them there is absolutely hope. That in reality, Nate, what I see is that the relationships that have survived sexual addiction and done their work are actually the strongest. They're the most genuinely intimate relationships. That as devastating as it is, and I don't want to negate a woman's pain, because I do think that sexual betrayal, this is a bigger deal than betrayal with alcohol or drugs or gambling or something else, because it just cuts such to the core of who we are and to our spirituality. So this is a huge, devastating issue in a relationship. And I see time and time and time again that it can be God's window of opportunity to give these two individuals the kind of relationship, the marriage they've always wanted, both of them, that they've dreamed about, that certainly God wants for them. It takes an enormous amount of work. And out of the fire and ashes of this kind of betrayal can really come something beautiful. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I see it. I see it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That certainly is the story of the Larkin family. My wife says these days that as lousy as those first 10 years of marriage, 20 years of marriage were, she'd take him again to get the last 12.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That's powerful, man.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Well, Marnie, I know that a lot of our listeners are going to want to get a copy of the book, No Stones. This is available, published by InterVarsity.
Yes, published by InterVarsity. I actually self-published that book in, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was 2002. That's awful. I don't even remember when it was. It was quite a journey to self-publish it. Just really feeling like, Lord, at this point, I don't care if I take it to Kinko's or wherever. Mm-hmm, I just want to have something to put in the hands of hurting women. And I'm so thrilled that just this year, in March of 2010, InterVarsity picked it up. And so I did a revision of the book, and I'm really excited about that. So it's available at Amazon or whatever. Unfortunately, you can't walk into a Christian bookstore and buy it, but maybe one day.
Yeah, that's the same story with some chains, some bookstores with Samson and the Pirate Monks. They'll have it under the counter. They'll special order it. You'll get it in a paper bag. But
yes. Well, think though about being a woman to walk in I don't need this for my husband. I need this for me.
Oh.
That's a whole different
that's be
deal.
Tough.
But anyway.
Yeah. Thank God for Amazon, huh?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And how can folks contact the Bethesda Workshop?
Yes. The website is probably the best way, Bethesda Workshops, plural with an S, .org.
Okay.
So we do have an online store so people can get this book or a variety of other resources. Also links to different 12-step groups, support groups. There's a section called First Steps. So if you recognize, oh my goodness, this is something I'm struggling with or someone I love is struggling in this area, just good suggestions about what to do, just as initial first steps. There are lots and lots of resources available on BethesdaWorkshops.org in addition to information about our specific clinical workshops. So.
All right. Well, that's wonderful. And I know you're out speaking a lot. You're doing conferences. You're based here in Nashville.
Yes.
Are you also... still doing therapy? You working?
I don't do any direct clinical work any longer.
Yeah,
just directing the workshop program.
Too busy. Too much.
Too busy. I'm trying to learn self-care. It's that's hard.
Oh,
us doers aren't real good about
neglecting
setting those
boundaries.
Yeah,
we neglect ourselves.
Yeah.
Take care of everyone else.
That was
so helpful for me early in recovery when my first sponsor told me, defined recovery for me as radical self-care.
Yes. Yes.
And I hadn't thought about that. I'd been punishing myself and hating myself for so long.
Right.
Getting caught in that shame spiral.
Right. Mm. And then the other side of it is that in recovery, you can get the Messiah complex, or at least I do.
Yeah.
I've got to take care of everybody. I've got to try to
I wouldn't
fix the world.
I wouldn't know a thing about that.
Why do I wonder about that?
Well, Marnie, you got grandkids at home. You're going to go back and...
I'm so
sorry.
Precious.
Yes.
Yes.
Grandchild.
Yes.
You're gonna run home and spend a little time with them before they leave today.
Yes.
Get that final kiss.
That's right.
I can't tell you how grateful I am that you took some of that precious time away from your family and made the trip here to talk to us on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so
much. I'm so glad to be here and so appreciate what Samson Society's doing. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. And we'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Spirit, and who share incarnation with Him, who belong to eternity, stranded in time, and weary of struggling within. Forget not the hope that's before you, and never stop counting the cost. Remember the hopelessness when you were lost. There is a joy in the journey. There's a light we can love on the way. There is a wonder and wildness to life, and freedom for those who obey, and freedom for those who obey.
Well, Mondo, it looks like that's about it for this
edition
of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Another great conversation. Wasn't it great having Marnie here?
Oh, it was great, man. She's a classy lady.
She really is.
Yes, she is.
And so articulate, so dedicated to this work, and just being used so mightily. There are tons of guys and couples that I know, just personally, mm-hmm. who've benefited from one of the Bethesda workshops.
Oh, yeah.
It's good to look at another life, another story of redemption.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, until next week, I guess. Meanwhile, I do once again. I do hope you'll get in touch with us here on the podcast. Send us a note at letters@samsonsociety.org.
That's right.
Or drop something in the U.S. mail to
P.O. Box 224, Franklin, Tennessee. 37065.
Until next week, it's Nate Mondo here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Recovery. Say whoa. Recovery.
You see, there is no shame in living.
For real.
Even if your back's against the wall. Is that day. Let him cast the first stone. Because my Lord has carried us on. And everybody say,
whoa, whoa.
Can you hear me?
Recovery.
With your soul.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
With your soul.
Recovery. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Recovery.
Press on.
Say, whoa.
Press on.
Yourself off.